From the shores of Puget Sound, this is Healthy Homecast. Healthy Homecast is created and operated by Healthy Painting and HealthyPainting.com. Healthy Homecast is your source for information, news, and events that focus on environmental responsibility, environmental consciousness, and eco-related products and practices. Find us on the web at www.healthyhomecast.com. And now your host, Daryl Whalen.
Okay, hello and welcome to Healthy Homecast. This is episode 10. I'm Daryl Whalen here with Tony Freis and this week's guest, Wendy Hughes Jellin from Green Spaces Real Estate. We will be right back to meet Wendy and find out what she is all about right after Tony brings us some upcoming events in and around our area. It's time for some healthy news, information, and events that are happening throughout the Puget Sound area. Sponsored by PigeonPointPC.com.
Alrighty, and welcome to the news. First up is Organic Pest Management Class, sponsored by City Fruit. This is taking place Saturday, June 18th, 2011, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Green Bean Coffee House at 8533 Greenwood Avenue North in Seattle. This workshop takes an ecological approach to protecting apples, pears, Asian pears, stone fruits from common pests in the Pacific Northwest, including apple maggot fly, codling moth, scab, and other fungal diseases. The class will address strategies ranging from choosing more resistant cultivars, maintaining tree hygiene, using barriers, installing traps, promoting beneficial insects, and using organic sprays. Angela Wanderstrand is owner of the Green Darner Garden Design, specializing in edible landscapes, and has more than 20 years' experience maintaining gardens and orchards. Cost of the class is $15 for members, $20 for non-members. You can sign up online through Brown Paper Tickets or send a check with class name and your contact information to City Fruit, Post Office Box 28577, Seattle, Washington 98118. For more information, visit www.cityfruit.org/classes.htm. Next up is Seattle Tilth's Chicken Coop and Urban Farm Tour. This is taking place July 19th, 2011 from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at various locations throughout the city. This is your chance to visit folks who are keeping chickens and creating urban farms right here in the city of Seattle. You can take a look at how people are incorporating animals and food production into their home landscape. In this self-guided tour in neighborhoods throughout Seattle, you'll see simple chicken coops built in an afternoon and elaborate setups that took weeks of planning and building. See how exactly chickens, goats, ducks, and honeybees live together with people in an urban environment. For more information, contact Chris Iberl at 206-633-0451, extension 119. And last but not least is Energy Efficiency Open House and Barbecue. We'd like to invite you to a free community energy efficiency open house and barbecue brought to you by Sustainable Works, Community Power Works, Green Canopy Homes, and the Climate Co-op. This event will take place on June 23rd at 1317 Dawson Street in Southeast Seattle. Members of the community are welcome to tour a recently green renovated home, view energy efficiency upgrades, and learn how they can reduce their carbon footprint and make their home more energy efficient. Staff from the Community Power Works Project, Sustainable Works, Green Canopy Homes, and the Climate Co-op will be on site to help answer questions and educate community members about how they can access stimulus funds to help pay for energy efficiency home improvements. For more information, visit www.sustainableworks.com or call 206-575-2252. That is the news, and now back to the podcast.
Please feel free to send any news, information, and events that focus on environmental consciousness and responsibility, as well as health, happiness, safety, and well-being, to info
at healthyhomecast.com. And now, back to Healthy Homecast.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. We'll have those events listed on healthyhomecast.com along with this episode, which is episode 10. So in our last episode, we heard from Steve Gilbert from Toxipedia. And next week, we will hear from Steve, I can't pronounce his last name, so I won't try, who wrote a book about Buckminster Fuller, who some say is the world's first environmentalist. We're here with our guest this evening, Wendy Hughes Jellin. I don't recall how I had found out about the event, yet I originally met Wendy from receiving a personalized tour through the High Point neighborhood several years ago. For those of you who do not know, our producer and co-host Tony Freiss also lives in High Point with his family. Wendy was very kind and accommodating and very passionate and knowledgeable about the High Point neighborhood and the things that were going on there, and green real estate in general. So a few of the things she's known for are being a negotiator, a community builder, a native plant steward, an animal lover, and a handbell ringer. Her professional designations include Built Green Certified Professional, Real Estate Broker, Earth Advantage Broker, and an Eco Broker Certified. And I think there was another one that she just had added to the list we'll find out about, and there's more stuff that she's working on. We'll find out what the stuff means, and when it is all mixed and edited, we'll post some of her favorite links, favorite books, and things along with the episode. So let's get rolling. Wendy, please tell us in your own words who Wendy Hughes Jellin is, what you do, where you do it, and why you do it.
Oh, boy. I've been living in West Seattle since 1997, so I'm from the country originally. So coming to the city, West Seattle felt really comfortable because I still had trees and plants and stuff like that. And when I bought my first home in 2001, I found out that the Washington Native Plant Society had a native plant stewardship training program. And I got involved with the training program because I wanted to be able to give back to the community, because I'd done the Rocks Hill Wetland Restoration with the Westwood Neighborhood Community Council in 1999 and 2000. So I kind of cut my teeth with Gary Sink and Terry Griffith, who now own Beverage Place Pub on California Avenue Southwest. I've known them for a really long time. I heard Tony be excited over there.
Anybody who has not checked out the Beverage Place Pub, check it out.
You can bring your dog.
You can bring your dog, yes.
We actually helped when they had their old location across the street put the
bowling lane bar
on. I was actually one of the 10 people that lifted that up.
Oh, well, wow.
On any given Friday night, you might be able to come see me and my dog.
Do you have a beer stein with your name on it?
No, I don't.
I have a beer stein with my name on it. Unfortunately, I'm not there enough.
Yeah.
But one of our past guests is actually the trivia night host.
Yes.
Jeff McCord.
Jeff and his wife were also involved in the Rocks Hill Wetland Restoration Project.
Rosemary.
That's how I met all of them back then.
It's a small world, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think you all start together and then you branch out into other interests, and then eventually you kind of loop back into each other through other avenues. So I've known Jeff for a really long time. I don't know them really well, but I was a real estate agent back in 1999 with Windermere here in West Seattle. And I was able to use the conference room there for meeting space for the Rocks Hill Wetland Restoration Project. And so that was kind of my contribution, as well as helping with the grant writing. And everyone brings something different to the project. So I really enjoyed that. So when I found out about the Native Plant Stewardship Training Program, to have some formal training and learn some Latin, which was kind of scary. There's a test that you have to pass. You have to learn a certain number of plant names. The training is free, and it's like, It's like a 10-week college course, essentially. But you have to give 100 hours of volunteer time back in exchange. And I think they just completed their last application round for the King County program. They are holding it at South Seattle Community College. Again, I think starting I think it starts in the middle of May. So someone might be able to sneak in under the deadline on that at WNPS.org. And that really taught me a lot about what to do with my new yard when I bought my first house. And we used to go out to East King County up in East Redmond when they were starting to bulldoze everything out there. Trilogy and Quadrant, those developers would give a one-day permit to the Washington Native Plant Society. And also King County has a rescue program where people could come out and dig up plants and pot them up for the nursery for the Native Plant Society to sell at their plant sale every year as a fundraiser. And they would sit in the nursery right now, which is up at Magnuson Park is where the Native Plant Society nursery is at. But every now and then, like the last hour, you could dig stuff for personal use. So I brought home huckleberries on chunks of wood, sword fern. I managed to find some of the bleeding heart, the Dicentra formosa. The only Latin name I really remember is of my favorite flower, and which is blooming right about now here in our forest spaces here in Seattle. And just kind of from there evolved into pea patch gardening. Then I was on the board of the Pea Patch Trust for 3 years, served as secretary there. And I just kind of moved from group to group, learning what I can, contributing what I can. What I bring is time, not money, to these efforts. So when I'm serving on a board, I work really hard, but I don't bring in a lot of money and I don't have a lot of money to give. So that's sometime a consideration in when you're being evaluated for a board seat is, do you bring money or do you bring connections or do you bring time? So I'm always able to get in with the time part. So,
politics.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's who you know, right? And, anyway, so just life just kind of meanders and, my health got to a point where I couldn't really do heavy yard work or gardening anymore. And I couldn't really hold hand tools or be on my hands and knees weeding all the time because your pea patch plot, if you turn away for an hour, you look back and you've got all these weeds or slugs or something. And I got my real estate license again in 2007, and I went up into High Point because I had just been finished being built out after the redevelopment, which is it was a Hope 6 federal grant from the government to redevelop it into a mixed income community with Seattle Housing Authority. And I walked into one of the offices there. There were five different builders there. And I said, just show me what you have. I just want to get familiar with the inventory. And she walked me into what's called a double wide townhome. It's not a narrow bowling alley type townhome. It's as wide as a two-car garage because it has a two-car side-by-side garage as opposed to a tandem.
It's a classy townhome.
As my friend Karen, who's visiting from Germany, says, it's posh.
It's very tall, too.
Well, the street-side presentation is only two stories, which is what I like. It's not intimidating. Like some of the builders, they're built three-story townhomes. The third story is in the hill underneath, and you access the garage from the back. And what's nice about High Point is that there are cars everywhere. I mean, there's no avoiding that. But the garage presentation is really downplayed. You either have garage entry from the rear, from an alley, or even the large homes, they only have a single car garage. When you drive through a suburb, say out in Auburn or Kent, all you have is this huge two-car garage out front. And the house is set back. In High Point, the house is out front, or if the garage happens to also be there, it's under a porch roof or something like that, and it's tied in with the covered front porch, and you just almost don't realize that there's a garage there. And it just is a more friendly and appealing presentation. And every home in High Point, whether it's a rental home or an owned home, has a covered front porch. It's what's called a French porch community, where people are supposed to be encouraged to sit outside and talk to people as they walk by.
And I, you know, just being a resident of High Point, too, that's one of the qualities of the neighborhood, even though I come up more, you know, like our pond area and everything, is people in the neighborhood I've really felt that that type of development's really led to a sense of community that mm-hmm. people love to get to know each other. People are friendly. I've gotten names of more people who I live next to in the 8 months that I've been there mm-hmm. than I have probably in where I previously lived for 6-7 years.
Right. And did you know we have a blue heron that lives there?
I've seen the blue heron okay. lately. We also have a coyote.
Oh, yes. I've reported to the West Seattle blog on numerous occasions. Last week, it was actually came right up behind us. My dog was pulling behind me, and I didn't know why, so I was trying to drag. And the coyote was coming nose to nose with her within 3 feet. And I kind of got the sense it was just curious. It was one of the smaller ones. Yeah. So I think it was a yearling. It was, you know, it wasn't not a puppy, but it didn't seem aggressive or anything like that, but you're kind of torn between wanting to experiment with it and see if they did sniff noses, what would happen, and just yelling at it and trying to scare it away, which is what we ended up doing.
And that's we're probably talking about the same coyote here because I know I've scared one off.
There's a big one too.
There's also a very giant raccoon in the neighborhood too. he looks like a small bear.
It's probably bigger than the coyote.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
I'd almost be sure.
I've seen that coyote. If we're talking about the same coyote, I've seen it up and Viewpoint Park on the playground, just like laying under the slide, and it just watches you as you walk down the sidewalk. I mean, I really think it's just kind of curious, trying to figure people out. It hasn't come after me. The big one, the first encounter we had in January, the big one followed us to almost steps within our door, and that freaked us out. It was definitely a stalking. This is not, doesn't seem to be stalking, so.
I think that almost, you know, just High Point, for some reason, has that abundance of wildlife. We have herons, we have coyotes, we have raccoons and everything. And it might say something about the neighborhood and the type of development that's in there that's sustainable to more than just humans.
Well,
and my dog loves it.
Yeah. Longfellow Creek, which is just below High Point. Mm-hmm. High Point, the redeveloped area part of High Point, is 120 acres. And it's a Built Green certified community. And what that means is that there was a checklist that the developers had to follow to, and the primary goal was managing runoff. And it is all sloped. The roads are all sloped into the bioswale, which is filled with plants, which then filter the rainwater. So to kind of cleanse the water that might have impurities in it, that then goes down into a permeated culvert below it. And then it runs through the culvert system into the big pond down below, which is like a 2.5 acre pond. If you looked at surface area. And then from there, it retains in the pond during flooding stages up there before flooding Longfellow Creek. I mean, the idea is to take all this water that's running off all these roofs, because there are way more roofs up there now than there were before, and actually managing that water and keeping it from flooding down below. So I think there's less flooding in Longfellow Creek than there used to be. But 2 years ago, we still did have really bad flooding down by All Star Fitness. But Longfellow Creek is one of only 4 remaining salmon-bearing streams in the entire city of Seattle. And that's why preservation of the waterway there is so crucial. And it started with the Rocks Hill Wetland Restoration in 1999. This was an ancient peat bog that had been covered up with soil and turned into a soccer field when Westwood Village was built back in the 60s. And it flooded every year, and they could never use it. You know, the kids are out there sloshing around trying to play. It was just miserable, and it was a shame that all that stuff was torn out. So they excavated out until they were actually able to reach back down to some of the peat that's still there. And literally thousands of plants were brought in. Individual stems of grass in little tubes of water alive from a nursery came in. There were lots of nonprofits that helped plant, like Flower Star or Star Flower. I remember them, and a bunch of volunteer groups would come and help. And United Way, they have that Day of Caring, so you'd fill out an application to get groups to come in and help plant then. That was like a 2-year project. And I think they still have weeding, you know, parties down there once a month. I mean, there's some folks that live near there that are very attached to the park. It's very nice. I walk my dog through there. I mean, the birds, the you know, and there's not much water there. I mean, the plants are doing the job.
Well, I know there's a group that me and my wife have volunteered with. I forget the gentleman's name right offhand. That's
Steve Blackstock.
It might be. I think it is. Mm-hmm. He does a lot on Del Ridge. Longfellow Creek.
He lives right across the street there. He owns Blackstock Lumber in on the way to Magnolia out there, Interbay.
Oh, okay.
Scott Blackstock.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Can't I would totally trust Wendy.
Yes, we'll totally trust Wendy.
He's a nice guy.
Let's get away from the high point for right now, and let's get a little back more on track about what led you to the Green Spaces Real Estate and where you are now with your certifications and stuff now. And we'll definitely visit all this other stuff as we get into the interview.
Well, my discovering High Point and greenspacesrealestate.com, which is my blog, kind of all happened at the same time. I was working for a real estate broker that did right-of-way negotiation and relocation for the third runway at SeaTac Airport for noise and remediation right before they opened it. We had to move all these people out. And she said, okay, the only way you're going to make more money is if you do some residential sales. And she asked all of the people who worked for her to come back with a business plan. And what I went to a conference. Independent Broker Association had a conference down there where I went to a workshop, like an hour-long thing of Web 2.0. Websites are dead. What you needed was a blog. Okay, so remember, this is 2007. This is, you know, it's been 4 years now. Earth Day, 4 years ago, is when I launched my blog. And I came away from that right after being told I needed to have a business plan with, okay, I need to have a URL that says what it is without being too long. And it needs to be open enough that I can wrap all the things that I'm interested in into it, which included sustainable farming, consumer-supported agriculture, gardening, parks for the dog, you know, green living, because I started eating organic food in 2001 also. And that's kind of how the whole thing kind of snowballed into where I am today. It started with joining PCC as a member and eating organic. And then once your eyes open up to the chemicals in the food that you eat and that kind of stuff, you can't close them again. And then you learn about the lotions with the chemicals that you're smearing into your skin, that you shouldn't be doing that either. And anyway, so I do a lot of reading. I subscribe to Natural Home, Edible Seattle, Dwell, which is just for fun. It's a modern architecture home magazine, which is really cool. And I get the PCC newsletter, the PPatch newsletter. You know, I have all this reading material. I cannot keep up with it. But I think the point is that I needed an outlet to share all this information I was taking in. I wanted to find a way to benefit others through what I was doing. And I think by disseminating it back out, it kind of fixed it into my head better of what I was learning. And I really liked the aha moment that I can give people every now and then. Like my latest one is with the CFL light bulb. And it's not about using a CFL light bulb. It's about, when you first put in the new CFL light bulb, you need to let it burn for at least 4 hours to set the burn. Uh-huh. Because if you don't set the burn, it won't ever have full capacity and it will burn out much sooner than it should. And this is why people complain about the CFL light bulbs all the time. They're like, I'm wasting my money. Why should I pay extra for a CFL light bulb? It never lasts the 10 years it's supposed to last. It doesn't say on the package to burn for at least 4 hours. The reason why I learned this is because the city of Seattle picked a few zip codes and they sent this program was called Powerful Neighborhoods last summer and fall. They would send somebody out to your house who would literally climb up on step stools and take all your incandescent light bulbs and screw in new CFL light bulbs that you didn't have to pay for. Mm-hmm. And I asked him about this and he says, now leave that on for at least 4 hours. And it's like 6 o'clock at night. And I'm like, why? And so he explained it to me. No one ever tells you this. It's not on the package. And that's like, if you get anything from this entire conversation, is when you put in a CFL, leave it on for at least 4 hours. You'll be so much happier with the production from the light bulb. We won't talk about LEDs. Those are the kind of bulbs when you put it into your house and then you sell your house, you unscrew them and take them with you because they're going to last 30 years and they cost so much money.
Very expensive.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, we're trying to get actually Randy from Northwest LED is an amazing guy that I met that we're trying to get on here probably down the road. But
get him to bring you some free samples to try out.
Yeah, well, that's a great piece of advice. You know, with some of the rechargeable batteries and stuff for tools,
it's the
for
same
power
thing.
Tools, you need to make sure that they drain all the way down to nothing before you recharge them, or it compromises their their endurance and stuff.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing, but in reverse. And when you first got that thing and you took it out of the box new from the store,
until I heard it from somebody else.
It says in the instructions, charge for a minimum of 12 hours before using this.
Yeah.
And if you didn't let it go the whole time, you damaged how long that battery will last.
And it's very important in my field with electronics, like your laptops and everything, to make sure you start giving the battery a full drain. And you actually want to do that, in theory, about 10 times to get the total power capacity that that battery really has.
Mm-hmm.
And it does actually say that in most instruction manuals, but they don't put it in large print. It's that fine print down at the bottom.
Number 10 on the list.
Yeah.
That nobody gets to. It's like, I know how to screw in a light bulb. I don't have to read the box.
So we started out, I think, somewhere around 1999 is where a lot of this conversation started.
Yeah.
Let's go back, you know, prior to that in your life. And can you share a person or event or something in your life that has influenced you towards all of this stuff and the type of person that you see yourself to be today?
Well, I think as a kid, you don't really think about that, but I grew up out in the country. When I was 7 years old, my folks bought 5 acres out midway between Woodinville and Monroe, out in an area called Echo Lake. It was a dirt road at the time in 1977. And so I grew up from a young age with the berries during summer, eating the salmon berries, eating the huckleberries, eating the thimbleberries, although those aren't the best, especially when they got road dust on them, you know. It was better when it paved because the berries were cleaner. But being around all of those trees and plants and taking it for granted and then leaving that environment, I moved away from home the day I turned 18. I moved into the dorms at the UW. And from there, I lived in – I was an apartment renter for 13 years. I lived in Mill Creek, Everett, Lake Forest Park, Kirkland, Bellevue, all these different areas. And they're either very scrubbed, like the east side just is kind of bland to me. I lived in Bellevue for 7 years. And they don't have the same tree and plant ratio to humans as, like, say, West Seattle or even neighborhoods around some of the larger parks like Discovery Park. It's just wanting to share, you know, these parks that are in the city need to be saved. And people just either have no idea that the park even exists or don't realize that if they leave the dog poo there, that it really is poisoning the stream downhill from there. Or walking through, the native plant stewards generally walk around with a knife. And if you see ivy on a tree, you actually cut it off at the base and it'll die. So you've done your part, you know, but a lot of people just are totally clueless. So some people can get trained. And then if you organize these volunteer parties where you just get people who are just casually interested, who live in the area, who will say, oh yeah, it's Earth Day, I'll go plant some plants or I'll go pull some weeds or something. It only just takes that little bit to then cause somebody else's 10-year adventure or learning curve or whatever to then be someone like me who I know quite a few people. I have a lot of knowledge in my head and now I just need to share it with other people. I've branded myself so strongly green that people have totally forgot that I'm a real estate broker, or they think I only sell green homes, and I actually sell all homes. We call it traditional real estate versus environmentally certified homes. In our area, we have built green certified homes, a Northwest Energy Star certified homes, and that doesn't mean just having Energy Star appliances in the kitchen. And you will see LEED for homes a little bit, but that is not as big in this area. And what you're going to start seeing, at least in the city of Seattle, you're going to start seeing an Earth Advantage label. They wanted to mandate an environmental performance score or miles per gallon sticker for your house, but there was so much backlash on passing a law that you had to have a energy audit on your home when you went to sell it, that what they're instead doing it is with the carrot method, is that the 5,000 free energy audits that you heard about in the last year that people could just call up and get for free, that's a test program that then 5,000 homes have a score for free. Didn't cost them anything. When that homeowner goes to put that house on the market, they can market their house saying, look, this is my benchmark between 0 and 100, how much energy it's going to take to operate this system. We need to start looking at buildings as systems not just a home. It's a whole house. It's a system. And then if a buyer comes into a neighborhood and the houses are two blocks apart, you look at this house over here that has a score on it, you know exactly how much it's going to cost you to run it for a year. And this house over here that is essentially built at the same time may look identical because it was built by the same guy 50 years ago, has no sticker on it. You have no idea what the insulation looks like, what the foundation looks like, if there's even insulation in the walls. You know, you're going to buy the house that you know how much it's going to cost you rather than the one that might just be a money pit. You know, what happens a lot of times is when people get the environmental performance score for their house, they then go in and do stuff. They're given advice, you know, get some foam spray insulation, go in there, just seal some holes, just roll some insulation out in the attic, change out those light bulbs, put in some new appliances. It doesn't cost very much to what they call the low-lying fruit, to pick off the easy stuff, to actually save quite a bit of money from running the house as a system and then also getting a higher score, which makes it more marketable when it goes on the market for sale, which is the beauty of the Built Green certification for homes. That Built Green certification, I mean, a third of all new homes being built right now, well, half of them are townhomes, right? A third of all new construction is Built Green certified because the Master Builders Association of King and Snohomish County, Built Green is part of that group, and they've done a really great job of educating the local builders that if you just do these few extra things and get this Built Green sticker for your house, then it's going to sell faster and for more money than if it wasn't. And Greenworks Realty actually is the one who did all that research. Ben Kaufman, he's the owner of Greenworks Realty. I worked with him for a couple years, and he would pick through all the Northwest multiple listing statistics by hand and compile that, and was able to prove 2007 during the summer was when the environmental certification checkbox first appeared on the multiple listing service for homes for sale. From there forward, within 2 years, you could see the statistics. It was like they sold for 26% faster and 12% more money or something like that. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he had all those numbers. And so it just was a no-brainer. Totally.
Now, Daryl may be asking this question later on, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it anyhow. For somebody looking to buy a home, what does Built Green do for them? What does that entail in a home?
Well, on the one hand, well, you just look at the money factor, and then there's the altruistic factor, which is totally separate. Money seems to speak to people more. Mm-hmm. It's going to cost less money for them to operate the home because it's got better insulation, better appliances, better lighting. All these considerations have been taken into effect when it was designed. Then we've also proven through the research done by Greenworks Realty that that home, because it has that certification, later when that person goes to sell it, 5 to 7 years later, which is what the statistics show, is how long a person owns a house, it's going to sell for more money and faster than the neighboring house on the same block.
Okay.
That's the easy answer. The altruistic side of that is that more than half of what makes a home Built Green or any other environmental certification happens before the guy ever moves in. It's part of what happens in construction.
Okay.
Measure twice, cut once. Used products are recycled appropriately. They recycle all, like the lumber goes to a reuse place. It doesn't go to the landfill. It used to be it would just be hauled off to a landfill. There'd be a dumpster on site they just dump everything into. Now there's people who come, like I live in High Point right now. There's Polygon is in there building homes in phase two.
Yeah.
They got someone coming in every couple of days who literally goes behind all of the construction areas and picks through everything and hauls it all off. There's no scrap back there. You just have to trust that, this is what they state. They have a very strong environmental stance, and all those homes are 3-star Built Green certified at the 300-point level, the new construction is, that they are doing the right thing with those materials. And you would never know that before you walked in the door. So part of being a Built Green agent or being an environmentally friendly real estate agent is that I need to educate home buyers and home sellers that there are programs like this that add value to your home, or the reason why you want to buy this home is because it's healthier for you. It's going to cost you less money to, you know, and sell for more money. Really, as a green real estate agent, I'm I'm a real estate agent, but I'm trained to help people with chemical sensitivities, asthma, or allergies to find a home that is going to work with them as opposed to fight them and in their health, in their quest for healthy, you know. Most Bill Green homes won't have carpet in them because that just, you know what carpet holds. Yes. And that's horrible. And also forced air heating. That just blows dust around the whole house. My house has baseboard heating. So all the polygon homes do, actually. Some of the 4-star built green homes in phase one of High Point have hydronic heating, where it's just a little unit in the wall that's just got water circulating around and just the heat drifts out. Like the old style, water pipe, you know, but they're very low profile now. They don't stick out from the wall very far, and they're like a fifth of the size of what they used to be. And if you have good insulation, good windows, and you have a neighbor on the other wall, so you don't have all four walls exposed, you actually save some heat that way, and your money going out of your pocket every month is much less.
So keeping in mind that we're a resource for everyone from the very informed to the not so informed. Let's go through each one of your designations and tell us what each of them are and what they mean. Mm-hmm. So let's start with what does it mean to be a Bill Green certified professional real estate broker?
What that means is I have a certification from Bill Green. I went through a 30-clock-hour course at North Seattle Community College in the very first class they did in 2007. I begged and pleaded them to come up with a class so that real estate professionals could learn about their product and help sell it so that people would understand it. So that was like the very first kickoff, and that's the biggest program we have here in the Tri-County area, essentially, is Built Green. EcoBroker is a national environmental real estate training program. It is 18 clock hours broken into 6-clock-hour segments that covers like energy efficiency, lighting and water, and something else, marketing, I think, something like that. I did it last year. And once you've done one training program, well, some of the questions are tricky, but I mean, you can almost do all the training programs and kind of skate through a little bit because you kind of know some of the answers already. The EcoBroker one wasn't so easy, though. I actually had to work pretty hard at the questions. And then Earth Advantage Broker, City of Seattle brought people from Portland. The Earth Advantage Institute is in Portland. They hire them to train 350 real estate agents in the Seattle area for free. I think that was 18 clock hours because they were going to roll out this environmental performance score for homes in the Seattle area. And they need real estate agents to understand what that is to be able to sell it.
So there's a lot of real estate brokers out there, and there's a lot of quote unquote green realtors out there and stuff. You know, some people are really doing it and really living it, and some people are just kind of putting the name on there. And how does what you do differ from what others do in your field?
I think part of it is that, and I don't know, I think maybe almost everyone who's gone to the trouble of doing green training as a real estate professional really does care about educating their clients about all these different things. Just the approach might be different. I've had my blog for 4 years. I do a lot of videos that I post to YouTube that I can then share on my blog. My blog used to be a lot about green lifestyle information and less about real estate. And I decided that I needed to split that up so that the blog became just really real estate. And I started a Facebook page, Westside Green Living with Wendy, where I share the lifestyle information. So I kind of divided it out. And so between the videos and the blogging and I've done, you know, like the tours I used to do for High Point, I mean, I never got any deals out of that. Half the people on those tours were real estate professionals. I was totally open to training other people. I wanted to share the community where I happened to move to. You know, the first tour I went on was the day I got my keys in July of 07. And I've been on tours given by the builders there probably 3 or 4 times in the first year that I lived there, that now between what's happened since I've lived there and what I learned from them, that's the same content, essentially. So you have certain statistics. You have to just make it meaningful for people. So I don't know. I think every real estate professional gets to know their clients individually, what their hot buttons are, and what's really going to appeal to them. I think what's really boiled down for a lot of people, though, is that it's the money factor that is the way to appeal to people, is their pocketbook. So that's really what we harp on now at this point. Harp's probably the wrong word, but we stress the money savings and the energy efficiency. You know, it's, I don't know. I mean, I do it for the earth, you know. I mean, I wish I could make a living just teaching people more about green. I seem to spin around and teach a lot of people and not make as much money as I ought to be. But man, I need to monetize my blog or something. I don't know. But then if you put advertising on there, then people don't trust you so much because they see you as trying to make money with your blog. So it kind of cuts both ways. But yeah, so it's just I'm working with people one-on-one and being willing to take the time to do that. And I think a majority of real estate brokers still in the business, that's the type of people they are. So I don't know if they all have three designations, though.
So are there a lot of people in the world that do this kind of stuff?
There are more, you know, the longer we go by since this whole thing started. I mean, 07 was the first time we had Built Green certification for real estate professionals. You do see EcoBroker the most just because it's accessible on the internet. It's a not a live taught class. The Built Green and also Earth Advantage were live taught classes, and so it was more interactive and you could ask questions and you worked in groups on projects and stuff like that. I don't know.
So why is the stuff that you do important? Does it really matter?
Yeah, especially since I don't have kids. You would think I wouldn't really care. For me, I'm really empathetic with plants and animals. They don't have a voice. And I'm not like woo-woo about plants have feelings and they can talk and all that kind of stuff. But I do feel they have rights, just like animals have rights, just like people have rights. And they need people who will speak up for them and try to protect them and do their best to save the diversity that we still have. The plant diversity kind of goes back to also food diversity. It's the same idea of not having all these GMO crops and not eating the same tomato that was grown by some factory farm somewhere, but having diversity of plants. I mean, it's just important, I think, as a species that we need to preserve plants. We need to preserve animals. We need to preserve the water. I mean, because it's the right thing to do. That's how I approach it.
Great. We're going to take one more question and we're going to take a little break here. So do people really care about the economy in this tight? Do people really care about the environment in this tight economy?
Well, I mean, that's why you approach it from the pocketbook standpoint, is that you're going to save money if you change out all your light bulbs to a CFL. I just had one light fixture in my house and my bathroom has 5 light bulbs in it. It was burning 300 watts an hour. You take all those 60-watt bulbs out and you put in 13-watt bulbs, suddenly it went down to 60 watts in an hour from 300. You can't argue the savings. So that in the economy we're having right now, one, don't even go into the real estate crash. I mean, you know, the volume of homes sold is just a lot less than it used to be. You know, I don't have nearly as many clients as I did. But I spend that time now in educating people because I know that it is going to get better for the earth and also for real estate.
Sweet. Well, Tony's been pushing me to take a break here.
I guess I could just yell in the mic now.
He's so aggressive. we're here with Wendy Hughes Jellin, and we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Healthy Homecast, Episode 10. Oh, we forgot our big, we got to bring out the cake and stuff for our big celebration.
Ooh, 10th number one, huh? 10. Yeah, wow.
Okay, we'll be right back.
You are listening to Healthy Homecast.
Gravity connects me to the earth, which connects me to people who connect me to myself more honestly. And gravity connects me to the crust, which connects to the leaves on the trees that make it possible to breathe.
faced with naive mind shield like a helmet. They would tell us that we don't know how we feel or how to connect with other people on the planet. Oh, if we only knew the power in each blue, disillusioned little.
Okay, and we're back. And welcome to Healthy Homecast, episode 10. Yahoo!
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, there we go. That's the candles, our audio candles. So we're here with Wendy Hughes Jellin, and we're going to pick up where we left off. So number one, let's see. Let's go through a few of the other things that you're known for one at a time. Please tell us what each of them are and what they mean. Let's start with negotiator.
Oh, well, that's the real estate perspective of negotiating contracts for purchase and sale, or making sure I negotiate a full commission for myself when I go to list a seller's home for sale. It takes a special skill to be able to approach things from the right perspective and get everyone to see the same thing.
Well, I've had my own business for 32 years, and I'm not so great at negotiating, so I have nothing but the utmost respect for a good negotiator. What about community builder?
That starts with the Westwood Neighborhood Council, serving on the council and also with the Rocks Hill Wetland. And then every community you move to, you're a connector with other people. And I always find ways to bring people together. Like in High Point, I started a canine club there, which kind of fell apart because I tried to build an off-leash area, really ran into some issues about liability with Seattle Housing Authority, and seemed really insurmountable. And then I also came to the conclusion that more than half of the dogs in the neighborhood are not social and don't belong off-leash around other dogs. So I kind of dropped the whole idea. But ideas like that. I created a play group for the Italian Greyhounds on meetup.com. So all the people who own Italian Greyhounds in the Seattle area get together and their dogs play. So that's a way to build community.
And that fits in line with the animal lover thing, too, yeah, which is on the list.
Totally.
And we heard about the native plant steward. Mm-hmm. What about the handbell ringer?
Yeah. 2008 was the year of music for me. And I signed up for piano lessons and joined a handbell group at the same time. I found I went to a group called Bells of the Sound that did a really cool Christmas concert. And ever since I was a little kid, I had this weird fantasy about being in a handbell choir. And here was an opportunity. The church where the Bells of the Sound practice out of, they also have a group. And anyone can come and join it. Even if you can't read sheet music, they'll teach you how your left hand is this dot and your right hand is that dot on the piece of paper. And you can learn how to play that way. And so I've been playing for 3 years now. And it's at Tibbetts United Methodist Church here in West Seattle. It's really fun. The rehearsals are hilarious. We laugh all the time because we screw up. And we're very respectful of each other. But, you know, I make fun of myself sometimes too. But and then I video all the performances during Sunday services and post them up on YouTube so other people can share. There's a real big handbell community nationwide, actually. So
cool. I have an uncle that's a barbershop quartet singer.
Oh, wow.
He's in, I think he's probably in his mid-70s, and him and his wife both travel around. How many notes are there in a handbell?
Typically there's 12 or 13 people, and we're covering 5 octaves.
Oh, so they have different size bells and
yes,
stuff?
Yes, very big bells for low notes and really tiny bells for really high notes.
So how does a triangulist fit into that? Are they looked upon?
It's not really considered a bell. I mean, I think it would be considered a percussion instrument. I've seen Bells of the Sound use a triangle in one of their pieces, but it's not something that's used regularly.
See, we can make these podcasts interesting and talk about entertainment and music.
I love watching handbell. It's like it's such a physical music that classical music, you can just close your eyes and listen to the music and really enjoy it. Handbell music, there's your body's moving. So I'm as a watcher of a really good group, bellsofthesound.org. They have a concert tour coming up in May. And they do costume changes. They are goofy. They play all secular music, so there's no religious music involved at all. Last year, their spring concert theme was space movie themes. And a girl here in West Seattle, Jill McVeigh, she came out with the Princess Leia buns on the side of her head, and the opening number was the Star Wars theme on bells. I mean, it's amazing what you could do with bells.
There's a lot of geeky people out there who probably like that.
Music geeks, yeah.
I'm starting to think, ding, ding, dong, dong, ding, ding, ding. I don't know.
But in five octaves, not just five one. Oh, okay. And so it sounded cool.
If you're bored around Christmas time, you can get a job in front of a store, too.
Yeah, just ringing one. That's boring, though.
So please tell us what your personal mission statement is, or that of the designations that you have built up that we said, or the things that you're known for, and what that means to the world in general.
Well, my personal tagline now is known for being green and wearing pink. We could thank a hypnotherapist for the pink part. I used to hate pink. I didn't like being a girl at all. I grew up in the woods. I learned how to rebuild a pickup truck before I even had a driver's license. And I went to see a hypnotherapist about weight loss issues, and she just would say, no one knows how to breathe. You know, humans do not breathe properly. We don't use our entire capacity. Unless you're an opera singer, then you know how to breathe. And she just said, when you breathe in and breathe out, like you would in yoga, you know, really calming, she says, envision pink air coming out, because that means health. Pink is a healthy color. So I bought myself a pink purse, and I started carrying it around just to, trying to embrace this whole thing. I got so many compliments on this bag. It was ridiculous. So the next thing I got was some cute pink tennis shoes, and I got compliments on those too. Now I have a whole section of my closet that is all pink, and I have a pink load of laundry that I do. It's just, this happened in 6 years, since 2005. I mean, I went from not a single pink thing in my wardrobe to a whole load of pink laundry. And almost everything that my dog wears is also pink.
And you're not wearing any pink this evening.
It's lilac. So yeah, it's very unusual. And so I would go to like my physical therapy appointment, and I wouldn't be wearing pink, and people would actually comment, "You're not wearing pink." So it just, I don't know. I'm known for being green and known for wearing pink.
So you went through kind of a reverse aversion therapy or something for the pink thing.
Yeah.
So we talked quite a bit about High Point. Let's get back on that just a little bit. What makes High Point so special?
Well, I know that there have been bus tours from like over 20 countries from around the world who've come to High Point to tour it, to learn how to integrate the environmental function and runoff system into a residential area. When High Point was built out, you had streets and ditches and plants and trees before there was a single house built. The entire environmental system actually worked before they built anything there. And the density of the people living there, but then every single home still having a private backyard, an off-street parking space for their car. Every even rental home either has a single or a double off-street parking. There's just, I don't know, I think they also had really good public relations too. Seattle Housing Authority has a big reach. There were a lot of people involved in the development of it, and people from all over the world wanted to come and learn how to do the same thing.
So tell us a little bit about the Hope 6 that you mentioned.
That there are several Seattle Housing Authority. I don't know if it's because it's a semi-governmental agency or something, but a Hope 6 is a federal grant. And the first project that was done was Holly Park in Southeast Seattle.
New Holly.
It's now called New Holly.
New Holly. Yeah.
It used to be called Holly Park. And in 1999, I took on an independent contract work with Mount Baker Housing Association over in Southeast Seattle. And the executive director, Jeff Spellman, he was on the board of advisors for the redesign of Holly Park into New Holly. And he got this really fancy framed poster thanking him for being a part of the project and stuff. So that was kind of my opening up to nonprofit housing and environment. And in High Point, they were able to fix all the things that they didn't do right in New Holly. There are some issues there. And then Rainier Vista came shortly after that. And all of these old World War II housing projects that were housing low-income people have been revitalized using federal money, or at least partially federal money. I don't know if it was a matching situation or what, but all of those homes were taken apart. I mean, it comes down to something called environmental justice, which I had trouble wrapping my head around for a long time. But the simple explanation is that just because you don't make a lot of money doesn't mean you deserve to live in a moldy house. And people who don't make a lot of money, I was working with an apartment building down in Burien here as part of the relocation for the airport. Half the people there didn't speak English. A lot of them weren't documented, and they were paying $300 or $400 a month, which is all they could afford to live in what was a converted motel that had been converted into little tiny apartments. And you would just walk in, and the air was just so full of the mildew and the mold smell. And they probably couldn't even smell it anymore. But you know how clothing and paper can even just be in that place for an hour? My file folder would smell after I left. This is very unhealthy. I had my eyes opened up to healthy homes for all people, regardless of income. So I really applaud Seattle Housing Authority for doing that. They've built quality homes. They're 3-star built green certified, so it's built to a certain standard environmentally wise. They all have baseboard heat, so they don't blow the heat around or the dust. Most of them don't have carpet, I don't think, on the main floor. I think the bedrooms might have carpet, but a lot of the houses just are hard surfaces on the ground floor to keep it cleaner. And it's still subsidized housing based on people's income. They pay, generally a third of what their income is, regardless of whatever their income is. It's just adjusted. It's like HUD, but it's a location-based subsidized housing. And I think it's great, and I think we need more of that. But I don't know how many more junky old World War II housing we have to tear down.
So how has that arrangement worked out for the living situation? Some people I know think that if you get people in there, that just because they're low income, that it's going to be a substandard circumstances for everybody else that are more like entitled and more blessed.
Right. Well, that's the whole point of a place like High Point or New Holly or Rainier Vista. It's what's called a mixed income community. The thought behind it is that you bring people of a higher income level into a group of people who make less money, and you have built-in role models, volunteers that live in the community that can help mentor or tutor. And I tutored kids for a year at the tutoring center with after-school homework. They have reading programs there. They need people to volunteer for that. Plus there's the environmental stuff that you can volunteer with too. So by mixing the folks together, you drag up the lower level, at least mentally wise. And also I think they get treated a lot better by just, it's someone who lives across the street from me. What they make doesn't really matter. They're still people.
And hopefully you humble the upper level people a little bit and give them some understanding
know there was a lot of people who moved into High Point who had no idea. Because law of real estate does not require disclosure of something across the street, because it's not a material fact to that piece of real estate being purchased that what's across the street is not really related. What's across the street would be part of what's called neighborhood review. And it would be up to the person who wants to buy that house. They have generally 10 days in their contract to do neighborhood review and to walk away if they decide they don't want to live there based on neighborhood review. But most people, they don't really do their neighborhood review. Some people check police statistics. High Point has some of the lowest per capita crime rate in the entire West Seattle area.
Huh.
And I'm telling you, people still have such negative views of the neighborhood, and they've never driven off 35th. And to look to see what it is.
What about the people that actually live there, though? Is there a general...
I live there.
Yeah. I mean, amongst everybody, though, is there generally
I think the people who are still there are people who really want to be there, and they really believe in the community. There were some people who have left, and I also had a neighbor who chose to let their home go into foreclosure because they didn't want to stay there. I've been personally working on a loan modification for over 2 years because I want to stay there. I want to keep my house. I'm beating Wells Fargo up left and right, saying our circumstances have changed. Let's resubmit. We're still there. We had a 10-year plan when we moved in. We wanted to be there for at least 10 years.
I think, you know, the neighborhood, too. I feel very safe and secure in High Point. Mm-hmm. I've lived in other areas like Mill Creek, where I had my car broken into multiple times. Mm-hmm. I've never, since I've lived in West Seattle in the past almost 6-7 years, mm-hmm. have not had my car broken into once. I've even left money sitting on my seat. It's still there. It's a really great community in those. Hope VI, if anybody ever gets a chance to look it up too, the Hope VI projects, we studied these a lot back in college. It was an amazing program done up by the government. Unfortunately, I think the funding has went dry for it, but hopefully eventually they'll be able to prop that back up. But it just transformed communities like High Point, Holly Park, the Rainier Vistas, mm-hmm. another big one down off of Martin Luther King, into just these amazing and abundant, vibrant communities. And it's because High Point, literally years ago, was just that. It was a terrible neighborhood. You wouldn't want to step foot into it. And I think that's what a lot of people still think. It's still the same thing. They just different colors.
They still think, I don't know what they think. I don't understand the whole thought process behind what people think about High Point now. I think is just strictly from ignorance. They've never driven down there. They don't personally know someone who lives there who would say, yeah, it is a great neighborhood. I'm way more scared of the dang coyote that keeps mm-hmm. following me than some guy walking down the sidewalk. Honestly, if you make eye contact with people and you smile and you say hi, you get that back.
Yeah, and it's the type of neighborhood that at 10 o'clock at night, which you will find me walking my dog sometimes that time, I feel safe. My wife feels safe. I don't have to worry. I don't feel like I need to watch and cover my back or anything. And mm-hmm. I feel that person walking down the road, I can just say, hey, how you doing? And they'll be like, oh, hi.
I bring my husband to be able to chase off the coyote.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
my dog's really little. She's not going to be able to.
I'm honestly more afraid of the raccoon that haunts me than anything.
So I know there's a lot of great things about High Point. I know of several of them myself that we could talk into. We could probably do an episode just about the positive aspects of High Point.
I would want to bring more people in for that. I could make some great recommendations for people to talk about it.
Let's talk about that. I was just curious. So you talked about a couple of them. But how many communities are there like this in, let's say, Puget Sound area, and how about throughout the world in general of these types of communities that are not only mixed income and stuff, but also this uber level of environmental, focus?
Large-scale projects, I don't think there are as many as there are pockets. I know out on Vashon Island, there's like a green-certified, subsidized housing project. There's like maybe only 20 or 30 apartments or townhomes. I mean, you find them here and there. The total tear-down and redevelopment of a large area, there's less opportunity for that. So I don't really have any statistics, but you will see – frankly, you're going to see it more and more. It's like once you open your eyes – to what insulation and ventilation and, you know, a healthy building can do for a family's health, you're just going to see it more and more.
Great. So why don't you tell us about your blog? What is it? What's it all about? Yeah. I know you touched on a little bit.
Well, it's trying to be about real estate, about green real estate. But it can be about anything. I loop in plant information. I try to tie it into homes, though. So native plants for your yard, naturescaping for wildlife, rain gardens. I know someone who's teaching two classes on that coming up in the next month in this area for both of those. They help manage runoff from your house, which is what rain gardens do. And naturescaping is generally planting a lot of native plants to have birds and other wildlife come to your yard. In the city, this is really important to help provide connecting green for the animals that are still left here. And I don't know. I mean, I try to tie everything into the green, at least from the home aspect. Occasionally, I just throw in a strict real estate thing. There are so many great real estate blogs that do all these statistics, and SeattleBubble.com predicted the bubble for years before it actually happened. You have Active Rain, which has got a bunch of bloggers on it, too. I mean, there are tons of people who blog real estate. I don't know of anyone else who blogs green real estate, at least not the way I do it. And so that's where I'm trying to specialize and set myself apart. I don't want to just do what someone else is already doing. So and no one even really knows the company I work for. I'm with Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate Executive, which is based out of Bellevue. But we have offices all around Puget Sound area that we can use to work out of. So that's just something. I've become my own brand, essentially.
I didn't even know that. So that's the name of the company, Better Homes.
Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate. The magazine has a real estate brand that that has been in this area for 2 years now.
Cool. So yeah, we've been throwing around the word green quite a bit.
It's an overused word.
It's an overused word. That's my next thing that I like to get into with everybody is, you know, what descriptive words do you feel work best with people that you communicate with? For instance, in my line of work as a painting contractor, words like green and eco are fairly commonplace, and it sounds like that's the case with you as well. Are those the words that work best, or where's your heart at around all that?
Well, the actual term is environmentally certified homes. When you look on the Northwest Multiple Listing Service, that is what the category is, where agents can check off what certification the home actually has. And there are now search tools out there where you can, if you have a buyer who only wants to buy an environmentally certified home, you could screen out everything that you could set it up so it only pulls environmentally certified homes. This is why it's also really important for real estate agents to know if their home is certified or not so they can market it that way, because people are looking for those homes specifically.
So what does a healthy home or a healthy person mean to you?
Oh, that's so open.
Well, there's no right or wrong answers in Healthy Homecast.
I think non-toxic really is the best way to approach it. I know that you use no VOC paints now. That was a choice for you in your business because you didn't want to die too early because you were inhaling all those horrible fumes. The VOC stands for volatile organic compounds. And paint now comes with no VOC. Frankly, there's no excuse to not use no VOC paint. If you just get hung up on a color from a particular brand of paint, from an environmental perspective, just for your own health, you really just need to go pick a similar color from another line of paint that is no VOC. It's better for you. It's better for your family. It's better for everybody. Same thing with carpets. This stuff off gases. The church that I go to just redid their nursery, and I know they use a no VOC paint. But the carpet, you can smell it. You can smell it when you walk in. I don't know how long it's going to off gas for. And
about 10 years.
The concern with children is that they're on the floor and they're breathing that kind of thing. This is why actually a lot of environmentally certified homes have no carpet, because the stuff off gases. Now, the carpet in my house, it was put in with staples. There is no glue. So it's just what do they call that? Knead in or heeled in something at the
I think it's heel in.
Heel in at the at the trim and stapled around the edge. And it's just really easy to pull it up and get rid of it because I'm so excited to get rid of it and put in, you know, some other sustainable hardwood later. But I'm not setting it to the landfill yet because I need to get the useful life out of it because that's the right thing to do.
Great. So we know that if somebody lives in Seattle and they want to buy a house, that they're going to want to call Wendy. What advice do you have for someone, whether they're in Seattle or anywhere, what advice do you have for someone that's seeking the type of services that you provide?
I think you need to split apart just real estate services and green real estate in this case, because I do still believe geography plays an important part into having a real estate expert. I've lived in West Seattle for 14 years. I really am an expert in West Seattle. When it comes to marketing a green home, however, there's a whole conversation out there in the world right now about changing how homes are valued. As homes go green and you have all these technology and systems that go into the home, where you put that house doesn't matter. It's going to perform the same. If we start valuing the house based on its performance and not its geographical location, that's a whole different ballgame. So if you're looking for traditional housing, traditional real estate, you don't care about environmental certification, you want to live in West Seattle, I'm someone you can talk to. If you want to buy a green home almost anywhere in the Tri-County area, King, Pierce, Snohomish counties, I can help you. Geography doesn't really play a role when it comes to environmentally certified homes.
Great. So this can apply to your real estate thing, but this is a really open-ended thing here. What helpful hints or wise advice do you have in general in your life that has significant meaning to you that you want to share with people?
Get a dog if you don't have one. I adopted a dog 6 years ago as a walking partner because my husband wasn't coming along on the walks. And it actually caused some issues later. But I love my dog. I mean, she's my little sidekick. We go everywhere. I can take her with me when I tour and I leave her in the car. I shop at places that let me bring my dog. I took my dog to a life care center on Admiral Way for pet therapy for probably about a year. Every week we would go and visit people who lived in this convalescent home to bring joy. It was good for the dog to have this socialization, but it also really does a lot for people who are stuck in a place like that, who are missing their own animals or just need that stimulation of touching something warm and furry. That I have three cats at home. My husband's a cat person. Cats are great. I really didn't understand. I mean, you already know dogs are more work than cats, right? It's like having a child, and I've been told it's like having a three-year-old child forever, because they are never going to grow up. But you don't have to pay for college either, so I kind of still think I'm ahead, and they don't talk back. So I still think I'm on the good end of it. But I have nothing but joy from having my pet. And she brings joy everywhere I go. People like, what kind of dog is that? It's an Italian Greyhound. She was on the cover of City Dog magazine in spring of 09. So with the pink background, of course. And I have it hanging on my wall now. But she's gotten almost well known as me, as, you know, being photographed in a book, you know. And I put her in some of my videos. She's well known on YouTube for dog puzzles and stuff. So...
my dog is
person?
About as dumb as a rock.
Oh, no.
He's a golden retriever.
He still brings you joy.
They're not too smart. He does bring me joy. Actually, my wife and I were going to have another kid, and we decided, well, let's get a dog instead. So definitely
smart
not
move.
Having another kid, because he's a lot of work. But we love him. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Great. Well, that's a great piece of advice. So what groups, inside and outside of your work, what groups or organizations do you support or are you affiliated with?
Mm-hmm. Sustainable West Seattle, I think, is very, very important. Yes. To anyone, really. But they also really educate with things around homes and yards. So almost anything you learn being a part of a group of sustainable – so there's Sustainable West Seattle. There's a Sustainable Seattle. There's tons of different neighborhoods who have signed up for sustainable groups.
There's a Sustainable Burien right down the street.
Okay. So this is really important. If you are interested in learning, if you just want to dip your toe into it, don't be intimidated. These are really – a lot of them are really hardcore greenies. Doesn't mean they wear Birkenstocks and eat granola, but they do know a lot. If you're interested in learning something, you will never find a group of people who are more willing to share what they know with you for free.
They are very hardcore,
yeah.
But they're great.
Yeah.
They're wonderful.
They won't intimidate. I mean, you're a professional, or everyone basically is a professional in something. They're coming together to share because they want to be around people who speak the same language. And I think being a part of a group like that is really important. I haven't been going to the meetings in a long time. I went like the first year I was more involved than I have been lately. But if I had the time, that would be where I'd be putting my time.
They're on Monday nights, the same night that we run our podcast.
Yeah.
Tony's actually working on getting somebody from the Tool Library or for Sustainable West Seattle.
Oh, great.
On the show in the future.
Yeah. We just borrowed a table saw from there. My husband's building a cabinet for our laundry room.
Yes, I've been borrowing tools too. Now, they've moved to their new location too.
Yeah,
if anybody does go there, they're at Youngstown now, I believe.
Yeah.
And we are working towards getting them on the show. And I know that there's other groups that have the tool lending libraries and stuff, and that's a fantastic idea. Is there any other groups besides that one?
I think that's a really good place to start. Also, PCC Natural Markets. There are several parts of the city that have them. Also, on the east side, I think there's one in Issaquah and Redmond. They're much bigger and nicer than the ones in Seattle. And that's how I really got started. I mean, I did a little bit of environmental work with some neighbors, you know, as far as learning about things. But it wasn't until I decided I wanted to eat healthier where I started understanding what I ate and how it went into my body and that it stayed there in some cases. It became important to me. And they have cooking classes and they have great literature. They have a great website. And if you're need to eat in a gluten-free diet. You can even, they have a whole section just on gluten-free recipes on their website. So they're a really great resource. They're also real big on Facebook. They have a guy who shares a lot of information on Facebook, so they're also into social media.
Cool. And we will, along with other the other information and stuff that we have for you, we will be putting it onto our website along with your episode. We're getting down to the last couple of things here. So what about website? Speaking of social media, website, phone number, Facebook, Twitter. We heard about your blog.
Yeah.
Is there anything specifically that you want to mention? And then otherwise we'll put it on.
Of who I follow or what?
No, for yourself, for contacting Wendy.
Oh, well, when I split my blog and said, okay, I was sharing all this environmental information on my Facebook profile, and I'm like, okay, I'm probably going to alienate some people. They're going to be sick of this. That's when I created a page on Facebook called Westside Green Living with Wendy. And so I really moved my sharing of material of 85% of environmental information strictly over to that page. And I think there's 135 people on there right now who are signed up to get updates from me. And then so the blog gets shared in both places. But the Facebook page, I mean, that's where people opting in saying, I want to learn more from you. Please share stuff from me. You know, I follow Jetson Green, Grist, Dwell, Natural Home Magazine. These are all really great resources that I share on I'm doing air quotes in case anyone missed it, that I share on my Facebook page, Westside Green Living with Wendy. It's a public page. It's facebook.com/Westside Green Living with Wendy. I know it's long, but it's a really great resource. And when I do videos, I do share them there also. So you'll get personal content from me as well as stuff from the big publications that are currently out there.
Great. Are there any specials or upcoming events or information to offer our listeners that we can post on our site that's of particular interest or that you want to put out to our listeners right at the moment?
Well, I don't offer any personal specials or anything like that, but I would say that in High Point, if you're interested in an environmentally certified home, there are brand new homes that are coming on the market now. They're being built by Polygon. Call me. Don't call the sales office. Every buyer needs to have their own representative, and that's what I do. And they have four different floor plans. Two are detached homes, and two are attached townhomes. They are fabulous. The models are amazing. The interior decoration in there is to die for. I love showing people stuff, and I learn so much just when I go to places of even things to try at my own house. So don't totally waste my time. But if you have any inkling at all, if you want to look at new homes or even homes that are for sale, resale in High Point or even in West Seattle, give me a call. Should I give my phone number?
Sure.
Okay, it's a 206-686-HOME, which is 4663.
You got home at the end of that.
Yeah,
awesome.
I did.
So, hey, Tony, you got any last anything that you want to ask about before we end up over here?
None at all. I think I...
It's nice to meet you, neighbor.
Yes. We see each other walking dogs.
Yeah.
Great. So, okay, Wendy, any last words from Wendy or anything that you feel was left out?
Make sure you burn that light bulb for 4 hours.
4 hours.
There you go. That was a good one.
And put in a programmable thermostat, too. That'll also save you money.
Programmable thermostat. Yeah, we're hoping to get somebody that's does that kind of HVAC and stuff coming on in the future.
They don't save you much money when you have a 10-year-old daughter, though, that keeps overriding the settings.
Oh, need to put tape over or something so she can't touch it.
I tried that. I need to, like, passcode or something.
That's a manual manual defector there.
That's a user problem, not a technical problem.
User errors usually.
72
yes.
degrees is what she sets it to.
Oh, that's too warm.
That's terrible.
So enough of Tony and his family issues. we're gonna end up here. We want to thank everybody, and let's see, on behalf of Tony Freiss and Wendy Hughes Jellin and we've got Karen here from Germany, which we hadn't let anybody know that we've actually got our. We had on episode would have been episode 3. We had Frank from Chicago, Illinois, yes. And now we've gotten beat out in the distance part by Karen from
Karen, from, who just flew in from Fiji, though.
From yeah. just flew in from Fiji. And
some bad jet lag.
And oh my goodness, are her arms tired. A little bad humor here.
Well, thanks so, for anyhow, having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite
it.
Welcome. And this is Healthy Homecast, and this has been episode 10. And we'll see you next time. And look for, well, I'm saying look for the episode, but people will be actually be listening to it by the time they hear that. Okay, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Healthy Homecast, brought to you by HealthyPainting.com. Please feel free to contact us with any comments, questions, or suggestions for upcoming show topics or guests. Call us at 206-650-4587 or send a direct email to info@healthyhomecast.com. Be sure to check back. New episodes coming soon. Smells like rain.